You're listening to The Cowboy Pages. Come with me, Christy Crowley, as I travel America in search of cowboy poets and their wisdom. Today's book, South Dakota, Chapter 1. You never know around here. A chat with rancher and poet, Yvonne Hollenbeck. Getting to South Dakota was easy enough, just an airplane ride. I got in late at night and arrived at my hotel, which seemed to be standing in the middle of absolute emptiness. Once I checked in and dropped off my bags, my hunger pains felt finally free to holler, and the next order of business was food. Of course, silly me, it was 9:30 p.m. on a Thursday night, and there was nothing open for business. I wasn't in the big city anymore, that was for sure. When I got in the road the following morning, and yes, it was after a very large breakfast, I was excited and nervous to meet with my first Dakota poet, Yvonne Hollenbeck. Hollenbeck is widely respected for her rhythm and meter poems, but what stands out for me is her humor. So much of her work is droll, clever, even laugh out loud funny. I wondered if this woman would be as hilarious in person. I have to take a little personal aside here and tell you a bit about my drive. I can admit now in hindsight that I landed in South Dakota with some serious misconceptions, or worse, perhaps a little apathy. In my mind, I imagined barren flats of brown ground, little wildlife save for maybe a few lonely cows, and perhaps a gray sky to put me in mind of some sad Steinbeck novel. I was wrong. I was really wrong. Once I'd been on the highway for about 30 minutes, the gray sky, which I had indeed met, lifted. And I mean that as literally as one can. Like a blanket being sucked toward heaven, the clouds slowly raised and began to reveal the huge, warm, welcoming blue sky that would stay with me all day. It wasn't long after the sun came out that I met my first sunflower field. Having never seen acres of sunflowers in my life, I was overcome. The richness of their colors, the sheer volume of their numbers were, in fact, no match for the way their optimism struck my heart. All those open flower faces beaming towards the sun as if to say, "I'm important, I'm unique, and there are 5 million other beauties just like me here too. Oh, great joy." I stopped my car. I stood at the edge of the field, and I took a deep breath. I was totally alone, but for the first time in a long time, I didn't feel lonely at all. It was a long drive to the Hollenbeck Ranch, but being greeted by their ranch gate, complete with cowboy logo, made it all worth it. I was welcomed, and genuinely. Much to my surprise, supper, the big midday meal of the day, was on the table. My meeting with this warm-hearted lady would start with her cooking for me. Pretty darn amazing. Around the table were Vaughn's husband, their ranch hand, a handyman for some repair work, and Bonnie Krugman, another cowboy poet. The food was delicious, hearty, hot, and there was plenty of it. There's so many days in the city when I rush through a sandwich at my desk or scarf down a power bar on the train that the simple act of breaking bread, or in our case, delicious homemade biscuits, felt luxurious. It was a great reminder of how human we become when we tend to our human needs in community. It was truly a nourishing meal. Once supper was finished and the dishes were done, Yvonne and I sat back down at the dining table in her home to chat. You can see pictures of my travels, Yvonne's memorabilia case, and the ranch at thecowboypages.com. So now, I introduce you to rancher and poet Yvonne Hollenbeck reciting her poem, The Making of a Cowboy.
From the time he was a button, she was there to keep him sound, tending scrapes and bruises from encounters with the ground. She'd chase away the boogeyman and tuck him in at night, and with her there to guide him, he was bound to turn out right. She bought him his first stick horse and a little pair of boots and dressed him like a cowboy in his Roy Rogers suits. She walked a million miles leading him on Dad's old mare. When he'd accidentally rope her, she didn't seem to care. She watched him round the menfolk so he'd not get in the way and dropped what she was doing when he wanted her to play. When he became a teen, a lot of prayers went heaven-bound until she heard his footsteps, knowing he was safe and sound. She pressed a lot of wranglers, starched and ironed every shirt, made sure he wore clean underwear in case he might get hurt. She hauled him and his horse to many junior rodeos or horse shows or gymkhanas and those little britches shows. Now her little lad is all grown up. Her job is now complete. She proudly sits up in the stands just watching him compete, because he's now a top-notch cowboy, and each time a buckle's won, his dad swells up and proudly boasts, "I sure turned out quite a son."
Fun, thank you so much for letting me come to your beautiful home and feeding me a great meal, which was absolutely exactly what I needed. And this place that you live in is incredibly beautiful.
Have you lived here always?
No. About 40 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My husband's lived here all his life. It's his home.
And so how did you come to be here when you got married?
He was a pickup man at rodeos, and I was a show organist, they call it, and I matched the action on the organ. And then I also played for big fairs.
Wow.
And that's where I met him.
And when did you play the organ as a kid? I mean, is that something?
Yeah, I was born and raised on music. My dad was a national champion old-time fiddler, and he had dance bands, and I started cording for him when he played the fiddle. I started cording, he said, when I was 4 or 5, but I was more like 7 or 8.
He's extending your career.
Yes,
that, huh?
But and then I took piano lessons and organ lessons and I play a lot by ear, and that's why I excelled at the match and the action and everything, because I never had to mess with music. I could just match the action with my music.
And now tell me again what you said your husband did at the...
He was a pickup man. He also roped and bulldogged, and he mounted other cowboys on his horses. But a pickup man rides in, I don't know if I have a picture of him right here, but there he is with another pickup man. But they ride in, and after a cowboy has rode a bronc, they ride in and pick him up off the bronc. Uh-huh. So they don't fall off and get trampled or something.
Very good.
And then they usually grab the flank strap off of the bronc, and a good pickup man always gets the flank straps off, they call them, and then they get it into the pen before the next one comes out to perform.
Wow. And we're sitting at your absolutely beautiful dining room table, and behind me there is a glass case filled mm-hmm. with incredible belt buckles. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Well, actually, it's an antique showcase, 11 foot long.
It is quite a piece of furniture. It's
and
really
we had
beautiful.
A lot of the kids' stuff in there in the basement. Well, then I decided I wanted a place to put my stuff. So all the things on the east end there, or the west end there, is trophies and things I've won with cowboy poetry. And then the rest are my husband's. And there's a lot of those buckles he won back in the 60s and 70s. But he's still winning buckles.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the sleigh bells, that was my great-grandfather's old sleigh bells. And those little boots was my husband's first boots. And those stirrups his dad made him when he was a little boy. Just a lot of our memorabilia. There's a clay sculpture of a pickup man there. It's called Helping Hand by Tony Kicka. He's a pretty famous sculptor. And then those shafts to the back of there are Butler Brothers. It's a big rodeo company out of Oklahoma, and they give them to Glenn. They're pickup man shafts.
They're amazing.
They're real padded. And
beautiful red color.
Mm-hmm.
Really beautiful.
So it's just some of our memorabilia.
It's just beautifully displayed. It's really something.
As cowboys head towards my kitchen after branding calves today, my front porch takes resemblance of a fashion show runway. First comes a stout young cowboy. I think his name is Lance. He's in a blue bum t-shirt and some Wrangler denim pants. He wears a pair of tennis shoes and a weathered baseball cap. Thank you, Lance, and here we have another well-dressed chap. Charles wears a striped shirt stretching over his spare tire. A pair of lace-up ropers is his choice of foot attire. Again, a pair of Wranglers are the pants he chose to wear, but he'd look a darn bit better if he had a bigger pair. Oh, and here comes handsome Richard in a shirt that's starched and clean. His nice physique accentuates the way he wears his jeans. His choice of boots are Bluchers. He puts them all to test in his silver belly Stetson hat and handmade leather vest. And finally comes the last one. He is really quite a sight. He looks just like a street bum, one that's just been in a fight. His poor old hat is filthy and badly out of shape. His boots would be in pieces if it wasn't for duct tape. His Wranglers, they're all bloodstained. Well, he must have been the one that did the castrating, the job that is no fun. Oh, and his poor old shirt has had it. The pockets plumb detached. He has two buttons missing. My, his wife must never patch. Then I recognize the buckle. Champion Roper 84. It's Glenn, my dear sweet husband, that comes walking in the door.
That's fantastic. That's so fantastic. So tell me now, in addition to still doing rodeos, what happens here on your property? What are you ranching, growing?
Oh, we raise cattle. Raise a few horses. Used to have quite a few. We used to run about 25 mares and wow. And a stud and stuff. But the horse market got pretty low, and my husband got older and really didn't want breaking horses too much. So we pretty well phased out. We just have a few now.
What accounted for the change in the horse market?
I don't know. Too many people raising them. And I think economy, drought, excuse me, who knows?
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about raising cattle. What is, as someone who knows really nothing about the day-to-day operations of that, what does that look like?
Well, we raise Black Angus cattle, and we raise our own replacement heifers. In other words, it just cycles. We keep our best heifer calves for cows. And then when they're 2 years old, they're bred and have a baby calf. And we usually breed them with bulls, Black Angus bulls, that are, they have a small birth weight. So they aren't so big and you don't have to pull them. And then, which is hard on the heifer. And then once she's had her first calf, then she, It's a lot easier for her to birth. And so then we just, every year we have a bunch of first calf heifers, and then we have all our older cows. And in the fall, pretty soon we'll bring our cows and calves home from summer pasture, and we'll wean the calves and sort off the heifer calves that we want to keep for cows, and then we'll sell the other calves or we'll winter them. Which we call winter them, we feed them and sell them like in February. But then the cows stay here all winter. We calve about the 20th of March is when we start having baby calves. And then in the spring they go back to summer pasture, in the fall they come home. It's just a cycle.
And what makes your job challenging? What's a hard day? What's a day that maybe didn't go so well for you?
Oh, I don't know. Actually, there's a lot of them, but not really. Sometimes when I've, it's not so bad anymore because we have all air-conditioned tractors, but we never used to have a cab on any of them when I used to have to work in the hayfield all the time. And so I guess what's hard is when a woman has to work out in hayfield all day and then you got to come in and get a meal for everybody. And
yeah, that sounds challenging.
You got and probably I hate heat, so that usually makes me a little short on nerves anyway. I like cool days. And then, like my husband said, we have a saying around here, you never know around here. You might start out in the morning and you think you got your day all planned and what all you're going to get done, and then either a windmill isn't working and you got to pull it or and repair it, or some cattle got out. The other day I was home alone and a neighbor called and said, you've got some cattle out up north. And I went up there and fence was down. Nobody but me to fix it, get the cattle in. And it was hot. That was not a good day.
Yeah, wow. That's a big job. Mm-hmm.
You say I look disgusted, but you took me by surprise, and I suppose there was resentment coming from my eyes. Ever since that hired man left, I've been more than his wife. I'm the helper by his side as he continues ranching life. I get the gates and scoop the bunks and help with feeding hay, and that is just the start of all the jobs I do each day. I'm right there for the cabin. I help with all the chores, then try to catch my work up when I get some time indoors. You see, I run and jump each time he gives a little yelp, and it galls me that you ask how he is doing with no help.
So let me ask you a little bit how it does function for you being a woman in this lifestyle. Is the work really equal between you and the men?
Yes. I don't have to work outside too much anymore. We have a full-time hired man, and in the summertime we have extra help. I just pretty much cook, and then I help out some. I help feed when all the cattle are here this winter. Lots of times I'll go out and help feed. But when we grind some of the hay with cane or something like that, cane bales, and we have a big grinder come in and grind it. And we feed that in have a big hay feeder. Mm-hmm. It's a big machine, and I feed that. I run that, and it only takes an hour or two.
And do you have children?
Yes. Actually, when I married Glenn, he had two little boys and I had two little girls. We were married before, and so we raised the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, that's like
and great. Got along great. They kids just still are really close, and they now we have a total of 9 grandchildren.
Wow.
And the youngest is an eighth grader, so our little grandkids are growing up on us.
Wow.
But yeah.
And are they? Do your children and grandchildren work in ranching as well?
They do horses. And Glenn's got one boy in Kansas, and he has a place, and they train a lot of horses, and he's a crop adjuster. And the other son is a Farm Bureau insurance agent in Valentine, and they have an arena and horses, and their kids all rodeo. In fact, the one granddaughter is a national champion breakaway roper in both the little junior Wow. Rodeo Association and the High School Rodeo Association, and she's just started college, and she's doing very well in the college rodeo.
Wow.
And so they're all involved in it. I got one daughter whose son is going to come back to the ranch. He's in college right now. And so
let me shift gears a little bit with you and talk to you a bit about your poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Which we were able to speak about a bit before we came on air, but I'm curious to know how you came to write poetry. Was it always around you? Was it something that was in your house growing up?
Yeah, I always liked poetry, and my grandmothers wrote poetry. My great-grandpa, an old-time cowboy named Ben Arnold, he wrote poetry. In fact, one of the poems he wrote is called "His Campfire Has Gone Out," had was put to music, and Don Edwards, who's a great singer, has recorded it, and others have, too. And but I've always liked poetry, and I think, you know, I've always wrote some little poems when I was a little kid, even. But I think my music background has a lot to do with it, because when I do my poetry and when I write my poetry, I actually am keeping time. Lots of times I'm tapping my foot, and that's why I'm strictly rhyme and meter, because I like that that rhythm. And so I know I've done some poems that's been put to music by, you know, various singers. And one of them was doing some recording, and her recording agent, who is Rich O'Brien, the guitar player, Rich said, "Is Yvonne musical?" And she said, "Yes, she is." And he said, "I could tell by her poetry." So that's what makes me think that maybe that kind of has a tie-in to it.
And then when did you start performing your poetry? I mean, was this something...
Well, 24 years ago, we started a gathering in Valentine, Nebraska. And I was a closet poet until then, but I coerced several friends into helping put on this festival. So then they said, "Okay, we'll help, but you're going to get up there and do a poem." And I was just scared to death. But Bill Lohman from Medora, North Dakota, who puts on the North Dakota Cowboy Poet Together at Medora, he heard me and asked me to come up there. And it's just evolved.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard other people perform your work?
Mm-hmm.
And what is that experience like for you?
Oh, it's wonderful. Reg Stegall has recorded two or three of my poems. Michael Martin Murphy has. And... Yeah, it's a great honor.
Batching must be pretty tough if he would just confess, because it seems whenever I am gone, I come home to a mess. But the kitchen stove is tidy because he don't cook or bake. I think he lives on candy bars and Little Debbie cakes. I found a cash receipt he'd got from the grocery store. He'd gone in for a loaf of bread but bought a few things more, like Oreos and donuts, chips and cheesy snacks, pretzel rods and Tootsie Rolls. I counted 7 sacks. He shot a $50 bill for just one loaf of bread. Forgot I'd left good casseroles and ate that junk instead. So next time that he grumbles that the grocery bills are high, I'll whip out that receipt and proceed to show him why. There was not 1 ounce of meat that I noticed on the list, and I don't want to sound just like some nagging pessimist, but about that eat beef sticker that he stuck there on my car, I'm going to put one on his pickup that reads, "Eat a candy bar."
Just your work in particular, there's so much humor, which really stands out, I think. And I don't know what the question is here, but I it just makes me think you must be quite a hoot to live with.
Well, I think I might be quite a hoot, but it might not be humorous. I'm like Bonnie. We make humor out of things that weren't very humorous when they happened.
Right.
And being married to Kenny Krogman and Glenn Hollenbeck gives you a lot of fuel for poetry. I got to be quiet because he's in the house now.
Oh, wasn't it Woody Allen that said, "Tragedy plus time equals comedy"?
Mm-hmm.
Which probably is a little bit true.
Yes, there's been a couple things that I haven't seen enough humor in yet to write a poem about, like the time he dug the whole yard up. He was going to save $200 and dig up the septic tank himself, so because it needed pumped, and he had the map to the wrong house. There's 3 houses here on the ranch, and it was not a good scene. I mean, I'm laughing about it now, but
not at the time.
You can see I work hard in my yard, and I had such a beautiful front yard, and it's never been right since. It was completely gone. It was like the size of Olympic size pool. You know, it was...
Sure. Yeah. Well, save $200, right?
Well, he ended up...
Maybe.
No, he ended up having the guy to come out and find it, and he found it in a different place. And that's when the discovery was made we had the wrong map.
Oh, my goodness. There it is. Humor. That ability to see the funny in the disastrous and the silver lining in the tragedy. What a gift to be able to share a meal and poetry and learning and, for me, a laugh with this artist I admire. Maybe it's time to stop taking myself so seriously. Thanks, Yvonne, for the reminder. And thank you for listening. You can learn more about our show, Cowboy Poets, and see pictures of my travels at thecowboypages.com.